Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And if you're looking for an easy way to start gardening, we've got you covered today. Joel Karsten is our guest, the father of straw bale gardening methods, and he has written a number of best-selling books on the topic. So, what are your questions about straw bale gardens? Have straw bales changed the way you garden? We'd love to hear those experiences as well. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Joel Karsten with us by phone. Joel, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, it's terrific to be with you, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great. With the tough times we've got now with the COVID-19 and everything else, are you seeing more interest in straw bale gardening?
I think so, yeah. I think there's, you know, social media, everybody's still on the Facebook and the Twitter and whatnot. So it seems like more of that for sure. You know, people getting prepared in this part of the country, at least, to garden, and lots of activity already happening in the southern part of the United States. You know, people got their gardens all planted down there already. So yeah, an increase for sure.
So for those who haven't heard about straw bale gardening, give us a quick overview.
Sure. Well, first of all, we have to dispel a rumor that you're growing vegetables in straw, Larry, because you're really not. What you're doing is you're starting out with a bale of straw, but the inside of that bale is going to be conditioned. It's going to very quickly become compost inside the straw bale. So that's important for people to get clear in their head that, you know, even though this is a straw bale when we start out, by the time we plant 10 days from now or 12 days from now, that bale is going to have become early stage soil inside the bale. And we do that by a process called conditioning, where we add nitrogen and water, and that feeds the bacteria, these tiny little bacteria inside the bale. You can't see them, but they're in there. And those bacteria will colonize, the bale will get warm, then the bale cools down a little bit. At that point, the bacteria have begun to break the straw down, metabolize the straw, and it really breaks it down into early stage soil. And now you can plant vegetables into that bale. So it kind of mediates all of the issues that you have with traditional soil. You know, it gets rid of all of those variables that can come with different kinds of soil.
Well, this is a good method, or why is this a good method for people who have little or no gardening experience?
Well, it's just so easy. You know, when you talk about starting a traditional garden, it's kind of funny because I'm online all the time, and I saw somebody yesterday that was posting some questions in one of the sites that I follow online. And you can see in the background, she had taken a sod kicker and kicked up the grass in her yard, and she was going to plant a vegetable garden in this new spot, right? And she's a brand new gardener. What she doesn't understand is that 2 months from now, that's going to be a carpet of grass and weeds coming back around that garden. And there's going to be a lot of work, you know, to get all those weeds pulled. And then when you're a new gardener, you don't know what's a seed, what is that you planted that's coming up versus a weed that's coming up. So you don't know for sure what to pull, and you kind of let everything grow. And then by July 4th, it's a great big, huge weed mess, and you throw in the towel and you mow it off and you say, well, it didn't work, you know. So with straw bale gardening, the great thing is there's no weeds. Yeah. So there's no competition from the weeds. You know, you might get a couple oat sprouts or wheat sprouts that'll come out if there's any leftover seed inside the bale. Those can be snipped off real quickly or spray them with some vinegar to kill those early on. But then it's just the seeds that you plant or just the transplants that you put into the bale that come up. So, you know, there's a lot of advantages to this method of gardening. But the reason people are successful with it as new gardeners, brand new gardeners, is because it eliminates so many of those variables, and it eliminates weeds, which is really a big thing for a new gardener.
I've always liked it. Well, I've been doing it for quite a few years now, and the fact you don't have to weed, and what you're growing is up a little higher, so you don't have to bend over so far. And you know that it's fun.
Yeah, it certainly eliminates. Like I say, you know, if you, depending on where you are in the world, you know, you've got good soil in Wisconsin, we got good soil in most of Minnesota, but there are parts of this country where the soil is just really rotten. And to grow a vegetable garden, they have to do a whole bunch of soil mitigation. You know, they have to bring in compost and manure and, you know, to try to condition and prepare that soil to be able to have a garden. When you bring in straw bales, the bale itself just becomes soil. Remember, all organic material eventually breaks down and becomes soil. That's what all good black dirt, black topsoil is, all from decomposed organic material. So we're just catching it before it actually looks like black soil. Instead, it's become chemically, it's become like soil biologically inside that bale. And that's at the point where you can extract nutrients back from that bale and absorb through the roots of a new vegetable plant in that bale.
So as we think about mistakes, what are some of the mistakes that first-time users of the straw bale method make?
Well, if you get a neighbor that looks over the fence and they see your 14-foot tall tomato coming out of your straw bale, and then they decide, well, I can do this. You know, my neighbor can do it. I can do it. So they just go buy a bale and plant into it, and they don't do the conditioning process. Then they've missed a really important thing. And in order to get that bale ready, you need to start to break down the inside of that straw bale. If you just stick a tomato into a raw bale of straw, it's got about 3 or 4 days to live, and it's going to croak. You know, it doesn't live very long. So that's number one, is they don't condition, or they don't follow the process to properly condition the bales. And you're pretty much doomed to failure if you do that. The second biggest mistake people make is they overwater. This is a very common issue with straw bale gardening. And the reason they do it is because they don't really understand that if you put a whole bunch of water on the bale, you won't create a puddle like you do in a normal garden. You know, if you run the water too long, you get a big water puddle there. Where with a straw bale, it's going to run out the bottom and disappear. So you can't really see that you've overwatered. But that bale will at maximum only hold 5 or 6 gallons inside of a bale of straw, which is really good. I mean, that's a great water holding capacity inside that bale. But if you add 10 gallons of water every morning on that bale, it's really only needs about a gallon of that water to resaturate the bale. And then the other 9 gallons run through and out the bottom of the bale. And whenever water goes through the root zone like that, it carries with it all the soluble nutrients. So things like nitrogen and calcium that are more soluble will get leached out of the bale. So it's really important when you water your straw bale garden that you only add 1 gallon per bale per application. And then you can increase the frequency of applications if needed. You know, early in the spring and in the fall when there's not a lot of growth, you probably only need 1 gallon, maybe 2 gallons a week on that bale. Where when you're midsummer and you've got, you know, 14-foot high tomatoes coming off the top of there and you got 100 tomatoes growing up on this plant, that thing's going to use a couple gallons at least a day out of that bale. So you're going to want to water multiple times a day. And that's easy to do with a little, you know, one of those little hose end timers with a battery in it. So you don't have to go out there and actually physically do it. Just put your soaker hose on top of your drip system and then a little hose end timer, like an irrigation system. It goes off 2 or 3 times a day, but it only waters for that same dose, that 1 gallon per bale, and then multiple times a day. And you'll have just a glorious garden if you do that. You don't have to fertilize because you haven't leached any of the fertilizer out of the bale, you know, any of those nutrients out of the bale. So you don't need to fertilize normally. And you just, it's really the difference between a really exceptional garden and one that just does okay if you overwater. That's a big mistake.
Yeah, it is a big mistake. You know, when I had just 2 or 3 bales, I actually kind of measured out 1 gallon of water in a pail. And then when I went to water, I just put the hose in the pail and water up to that line. And then I'd use that to spread the water over the bale.
Yeah, you can get pretty good at just timing it out too. You know, if you got a sprayer end on your hose, you know, if you're doing it by hand, you know, 15 seconds or 20 seconds will probably give you close to 1 gallon of water, and that kind of resaturates the bale. So, but that's a big mistake. I'll tell you another mistake people make is when they plant in the sides of the bales, is they don't get the seedlings, the transplants deep enough into the bale. They just plant right in the crust on the outside. And that crust does get a little crispy on the outside, you know, because the wind blows and the sun shines. So it's a little dry on the outside. So if you do plant into the sides, which I encourage people to do, you know, you're planting a little plug in the side of basil or something, make sure you get the roots nice and deep in the middle of that bale. Even if some of the branches get buried, that's okay. It'll come right out the side of the bale and you'll have a nice basil plant there. But you need to get the roots down in the middle where they got some moisture and some of that nutrients.
Yeah, I use a trowel to make that. You know, I just had to dig that trowel into the side and open it up a little bit. It's pretty easy to do that way.
Yeah, I always tell people to use your shovel handle because you're not going to use that shovel for anything else all summer. So at least you get some use out of it. Take the handle and shove it right in the side of the bale, right between the two strings.
No, that's not a bad idea either. Joel Carson, our guest today, he's the father of many straw bale gardening operations here. He's written a number of books. I'm looking right now, and right in front of me, I have his book, Straw Bale Gardens Complete. Joel, what are your other gardening books that you've got for straw bales?
Well, I did. The first one I ever did was called Learn to Grow a Straw Bale Garden. And that was a self-published booklet I did, Larry, years and years ago. And I sold it online and whatnot. And then, of course, the publishers come. And then the first book I wrote was just called Straw Bale Gardens. And then apparently I didn't get enough information in there. So we made Straw Bale Gardens Complete. And now there's actually a new one called Straw Bale Gardens Complete Second Edition. And that's got even more information in it. And then in between there, I did one called Straw Bale Solutions, which was a really fun book. I'll tell you the truth, it hasn't sold as well as the others, but it was a fun book to do. And Straw Bale Solutions is really, it's a book of stories about people all over the world using the Straw Bale Gardens method to solve a problem that they couldn't solve with traditional gardening methods. So it's really fun. It goes all around the world, sort of does a profile of the gardener and what their difficulty was, what problem they were having, and how straw bale gardening has provided a solution. So it's fun. It goes from Cambodia to Philippines to Switzerland to, you know, Holland and the Netherlands
it is a fun book.
It's a fun book. Yeah.
Yeah. And people can get, you know, there are copies of your book available at bookstores, but you have a website where people can order. I think you can order off your website, or am I mistaken?
Yeah. No,
what's your website again? Give us your website.
StrawbaleGardenClub.com. It's the best one to go to. We have a couple of websites, Larry, like most people, but Straw Bale Garden Club is the best one. It's the most interactive. There's a forum, so if anybody ever has questions, they can always ask questions, and I get to see them easily that way. You know, things can get lost out there in the Facebook world or the Twitter world, but it's easy if you come right to our website.
Joel Carson, our guest today, graduate from the University of Minnesota, received a Bachelor of Science degree in Horticulture Science, written a number of books, as we've just been talking about now, and it's great to have him with us. And a number of callers online, there's still a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Natalie Guyette, our on-air producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. We're talking straw bale gardening on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Joel Carson, author of a number of books. The one I have in front of me is Straw Bale Gardens Complete. We will take some questions now from listeners, and Heidi in Merton, Wisconsin, has something for us. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. Hello, there. Heidi. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I listening to the show today, we just demoed out some built-in bookshelves in our home, and the drawers, I was looking at them and going, oh, those would make nice garden planters if I put them on legs. And now listening to you, they're big enough. I'm going to just throw a bale of straw and not even worry about the dirt and have nice drawer planters with straw bales in them.
Well, there you go. There you go. So, necessity is the mother of invention, right?
So
this is fantastic.
So there's a couple of things you need to consider there, Heidi, and one is the positioning of the bales, because they've got to be up on their, what do you call it? Not on their end, but sort of on their side.
Their sides. Edge, kind of.
Their edge, yeah. So the bristly part sticks up. Is that, that's right,
that's
isn't
ideal.
It, Joel?
Yeah, that's ideal. You know, if she did it the other way, it's not, you know, it's not a deal breaker. It's probably not the end of the world, but it just works better because you can, when you got to do this conditioning process, Heidi, you're going to have to put some either organic or traditional lawn fertilizer on top of that bale and then water it in. And it's easier to get that fertilizer to penetrate down into the bale if it's going in from the edge rather than from the side. From the, I call it the cut edge of the bale. Any farm kid out there is going to know what the cut edge of a bale is.
Yes.
It's the prickly part. You know, if you bounce it off your knee when you're baling straw or baling hay, you get a rash on your leg before lunchtime. So every farm kid knows, but city kids might not know there's a folded side and a cut side on every bale of hay or bale of straw. So you want that cut side, if you can help it, you want that side facing up in your drawers, but that should work fine. I mean, I see people do raised garden beds all the time and they fill them with straw bales. You know, and then in a big raised bed, after a year or two, the bales completely decompose, and then you put another one on top, and pretty soon you got a whole raised bed filled with beautiful compost from this broken down straw.
And would you, would Heidi be maybe drilling some holes in the bottom of the drawers so water gets through in case it, you know, you get a heavy rain or whatever, you don't want the water sitting in the bottom?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. A few holes in the bottom.
Yeah, I would think that'd be a good idea, Heidi. But hey, you're gonna have to let us know how this goes and shoot me some pictures after you get things going. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Well, Dave in Broadhead up next. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Dave.
I just wanted to say that Joel's books. I've got a couple of them, and we did the straw bale. We do the straw bale gardening, but his books, like the trellising ideas and stuff, work in any garden, and they really work really super well, too. But I have a question related to the straw bales. We condition them with regular lawn fertilizer kind of thing, and I had a hard time getting it to soak down into the bale sometimes because it'd still be sitting on top. And my wife really wants to use organic fertilizer. We have horses, and I have piles of organic, you know, the stuff that's broken down in the compost. Would that work well for those straw bales? Because we do want to try and get into something organic if we can. And
okay.
Another question, are there some plants that work better than others? Because we had tomatoes coming out our ears last year. I mean, they were just everywhere. But some of the plants, like the cauliflower and broccoli and some of those, did not do near as well. And I'm just wondering if there's some plants that tend to do better than others.
Okay. Let's start with question number one in the beginning. First of all, if you do use like a lawn fertilizer type product, you don't have to worry about getting it all blasted down into the bales. You know, I'll take calls from people and they'll say, you know, it takes me 20 minutes watering one bale to get all that fertilizer down in. I say, oh, no, stop. You just need to get the bale moist, and those bacteria will actually come to the surface of the bale. They use that water that you've got in the bale, and they come to the surface, and they'll get the nitrogen off the surface. So you don't need to worry if there's a little fertilizer left on top of the bale. It's very common, and it really doesn't hurt anything at all. You'll see eventually it gets rain, and you'll keep watering the bales, and eventually it'll all break down and work its way down in. But don't worry during the conditioning if there's a little residue left on top. That's not a big deal at all. Now, switching to organic, I would discourage you from using manure. I think that's what you were addressing, was that you have horse manure available. I would discourage that. And the only reason is because it doesn't have a high enough nitrogen concentration. What we're looking to do in the straw bale is to lower the carbon to nitrogen ratio. So we need to add enough nitrogen molecules to break that carbon-nitrogen ratio down from what it probably starts out with, if it's like an oat straw bale, is 45 to 1. We want to get that to 20 to 1. So we need to add enough molecules of nitrogen to that bale in order to convert that ratio. And if you use manure, you can't get enough volume worked into the bale that carries enough nitrogen with it to make that happen, with one exception. poultry manure will work. If you have if you have chicken manure, that's like right under the roost. So you can't get stuff mixed with bedding because then you'll have the same problem with the horse manure. But chicken manure, once it's composted, keep it covered if you're composting outside so all the nitrogen doesn't leach out of it, because remember, nitrogen is soluble. And in about 8 to 10 weeks, you'll be able to pick a handful of it up and it doesn't even smell like manure anymore. At that point, it's composted enough. Now you can use it. It won't have any active E. coli or anything in it, and you can wash that down into the bales. I would be cautious using manure around any lettuce crops, you know, where you're going to cut the greens and eat those. You know, that's where E. coli problems come from, especially if this lettuce is going to be fed to any little kids, because they're a lot more susceptible to E. coli problems than adults are. But it can still be harmful for adults as well. Don't get me wrong. But so I would just avoid any manures that are going to come in contact with vegetables where you're going to eat the greens, for sure. Okay. I would encourage you instead, if you're going to do it organically, to use blood meal. And you'll find it's readily available. You go to any farm supply store where they supply feed. Usually they'll have big bags of blood meal. You can buy a bag of blood meal. And that stuff's got about 12, 13% nitrogen in it, and does a great job of breaking the bales down. Now, in terms of crops, for sure tomatoes do really well. Tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, the whole squash family, you know, the whole cabbage family for me seems to do really well. You know, it can be kind of a learning process when you're transplanting, or especially when you're doing seeds. It's important if you do seeds in it, and they're all tiny seeds, real small seeds, that you make a seed bed on top of the bale. Now, I don't want you to take your shovel and take some soil and put on top of the bale, because then you're just soil gardening a foot and a half up in the air, and you're going to have all the same problems. You're going to have weed seeds. You're going to have disease and insect problems that come with that soil that are soil-borne diseases or soil-borne insects, and you'll get tomato blight back again, et cetera. Instead, I want you to get one bag of soilless planting mix from the garden center. And this is usually got a lot of peat moss in it, and broken down, like rotted bark is a common ingredient, pine bark, and use that to create a little thin layer of seed bed on top of the bales. What works good is spread a half an inch or three quarters of an inch on top, and then take your hose and spray a little bit down into the bale. So you kind of nest the potting mix down into the bale, and then put another little half inch layer over top and put your carrot seeds in there, or your anything that's really tiny, beet seeds, that kind of stuff, anything you're planting from seeds. If you're doing big seeds like peas and beans, you know, the size of your end of your little finger, those will be fine without any potting mix. You can just shove those right down into the bale, you know, get them to your second knuckle or so, an inch and a half, 2 inches deep. And the straw is coarse enough, or not too coarse, it'll still hold that seed in place and gives it enough moisture. But with those little tiny seeds, you need a seed bed in order to get a good even germination of those crops. Cauliflower and broccoli, it can be a weather issue as well. You know, some years we have better weather. Last year was super rainy and wet, and that caused a lot of fungal problems and things in people's gardens. So, you know, you can't avoid that even with a straw bale garden. It's still going to happen if you get a lot of rain. You know, you'll just get some crops that don't do as well, but usually your tomatoes make up for it, so you don't need to worry. Tomatoes and cucumbers and zucchini. Oh, God forbid, don't plant more than one zucchini. Just one zucchini is all you need. I did four of them last year, Larry, and my wife couldn't get rid of them at work. She's bringing them to work. She works with 200 people, and we couldn't get rid of zucchini anymore. So
there you go, Dave. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, boy, that answered a lot of good questions. Jane in Mineral Point, we turn to you next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning. Well, that was a great conversation. I have been straw baling for several years because I have black walnuts, and I love tomatoes. So that was a combination that didn't work at all. So I learned all about straw bale gardening, and my tomatoes have been doing very well. Thank you. Thank you for discovering this and putting it out. Yeah, I really appreciate it. But I do have a question about fertilizer.
Your check's in the mail.
Curiously. What?
I said your check's in the mail, Jane. Your check is in the mail.
Okay. Okay, yeah, well, it is. Also, my tomato seedlings, yeah. Okay, now, I have a question about fertilizer. I like very much the suggestion of blood meal, but it smells, and it definitely smells. But do I need to fertilize those tomatoes in the straw bales?
During the season, do you need to fertilize?
Yeah, during the season.
It depends. If you overwater, you're going to need to fertilize them. if you overwater, then it leaches the nitrogen. Your tomatoes will turn kind of a lime green color. They get a lighter green leaf, and then they're just lacking nitrogen. You're going to need to add some nitrogen. Once you get the bales prepped, there's enough nitrogen in there to last through the whole season. As long as you're not overwatering, you shouldn't have any problem. If you do need to add some nitrogen, there are other products, organic products out there that you can use that aren't as stinky as the blood meal. You know, I do get the call once in a while from somebody and they'll say, "Oh goodness, my garden, it just smells like dead animals." And I say, "Well, you use blood meal in the garden. That comes from dead animals. So it makes perfect sense, but it's just natural. You know, there's a protein and that protein breaks down and becomes nitrogen. And along with that comes a little smell and, you know, flies buzzing around. And it's not a super pleasant thing during that couple of weeks of the conditioning process. But after that, once it's completely broken down, it's just fine and usually doesn't cause any problems at all. So, Milorganite would work. That's an organic product. There's a few other products out there. You can get fish emulsion. That probably stinks worse than blood meal, though.
Yeah.
It seems like the best organic ones are got a little smell to them. That's for sure. But this, you know, it's part of nature. That's where it comes from. So.
Yeah, Milorganite's another good option. That doesn't smell really.
Yeah, if you get it wet on a big surface, it'll have a little stink to it. But it's not too bad. Not too bad.
No, not too bad. Jane, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's see. Let's go to Robin in Portage next. Hi, Robin.
Hi, guys. Thanks again. I've been wanting and wanting for this program to come on about the straw baling. Anyway, I have a couple questions. Number one, what kind of straw are you recommending? I know there's all different kinds of straw bales.
Mm-hmm. Any straw will work.
I'm sorry.
Even if you get desperate, you can use a hay bale. I mean, it's called the straw bale gardening method. But I'll tell you, I've been all around the world. They don't have oat straw and wheat straw in Cambodia. They have rice straw. And you go to Dominican Republic, they don't have oats and wheat, but they have lots of sugarcane stalks. After they process the rum and whatnot, they squeeze the stalks and that broken down stalk. So any organic material that you can find will work for this. So if you can find a wheat straw, oat straw, barley straw, rye straw will work, baled grasses of all kinds. If you find a material that's got like a waxy feel or a waxy coating to it, those will work, but usually they take a little longer to do the conditioning process because it takes a little longer for the bacteria to break down that sort of that waxy coating that they have on the top. There are some grasses that are like that, but I'll tell you, if you can find a bale of anything, it pretty much works. I even tell people in my books how they can make their own bales, and you can just do that out of grass clippings and leaves, and you pull weeds and you get some, a few pine needles here and there, whatever you've got that's organic material, and you mix them together, put them in a great big Rubbermaid tub, Rubbermaid bin, and jump up and down on it and put some water in there overnight until you got to dump it out the next day. You got a big wet brick of organic material. And then you wrap that with chicken wire, staple the ends on a little wooden stick, twist the stick to make it nice and tight, sort of clamps around that brick, and pound the end of the stick in the ground, and you made your own bale. You know, it doesn't have strings. It has wire around it instead of strings, but that'll work for the straw bale gardening method.
Yeah.
What about alfalfa?
Yeah, alfalfa will work. It's an expensive bale. That's the downside of alfalfa is usually they sell for twice as much as a straw bale. And I'll tell you, the only other disadvantage with using a bale of alfalfa is it has so much protein in it, which converts to nitrogen, that it will usually break down really quickly, which is good for the plants, but you only get one season out of that bale. Where with a straw bale, wheat straw or oat straw, usually, after 1 year, it's pretty broken down. It kind of starts to slump a little bit and sag, but you can squeeze them together. I like to squeeze two into one and use the old chicken wire trick, wrap it with chicken wire and kind of squeeze it together. And then I use that second year straw bale for my root crops, my potatoes and beets and carrots. Anything that's a root crop or a cool season crop does really well in the second year straw. The first year straw bale I like to use for my tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers because they're warm season crops. They like warm roots. They like warm soil. So I use my first year bale, because the first year bales, when you do that conditioning process, remember, they get nice and warm inside. So by the time you're planting, you know, first, second week in May, inside that bale could be 80 or 90 degrees still, where the soil right next to that bale is still 50, 55 degrees. So your tomato thinks it's already the middle of June when you plant it in that bale. When you put it in the soil, it kind of sits there and shivers for a couple of weeks until the soil warms up, and then the tomato starts growing. Where when you put it in that bale, you get a big jump start on the season because of the warm roots down below. So use the first year bale for your warm season crops, things that like warm roots, and then use that same bale the second season for cool season stuff or for root crops. And you'll get a great rotation going that way. You get 2 years use out of bales. If you use an alfalfa bale, you're only going to get 1 year because they just break down like crazy. You'll see. Yep.
What would be the ratio per bale if you're using milorganite and just water? Is that all you're doing? And then how long before that bale is ready?
Yeah, you'll want to start, if you're using an organic product like milorganite, you got to give yourself 18 days. So I want you to start 20 days before your average last frost date. So you'll need to look that up. Depending on where you're at in the state, it might be, you know, it might be May 25th or it may be May 5th, you know, depending on where you're at. So look up your average last frost date, then 20 days before that, which could be coming up pretty quick here, then you'll start your conditioning process. And in 18 days, if you're doing it organically, if you're doing it with lawn fertilizer, it only takes 12 days you can plant. But with organic, it takes 18. Start the process. And if you're using milorganite, it's a little bit of an exception because it has a little more nitrogen than many of the organics do. So you can get by with a little bit less than I say in my books. But it takes about 3 cups. And you're going to do that on days 1, 3, and 5, and then you'll cut that in half to 1.5 cups on each bale on days 7, 8, and 9. And with milorganite, you don't need to add any of the 10-10-10, which is our normal last day. If you're doing it organically, I always recommend wood ashes, 1 cup of wood ashes on a bale, and 1 cup of bone meal. And that'll take care of your phosphorus and potassium in that bale for the season. Just helps supplement a little bit. It's not absolutely necessary to add those supplementals, but it depends on what vegetable crop you're going to plant. Some of them need more phosphorus and potassium than others do. So, but I always encourage people, if you got a wood fire pit laying around somewhere, just 1 cup of wood ashes on top of that bale. And I don't mean if you have 1 is good, 10 is better, because you don't want to do extra, but just 1 cup of wood ashes and 1 cup of bone meal, and that'll suffice for the whole season. Water it in good, sprinkle it on end to end, side to side on the bales, and then sprinkle it in. You'll be good to go.
I hope that helps, Robin. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And I'm just thinking, and here I am paging through your book as we talk and as you talked, and these instructions are all clearly laid out, and you got a lot of really great photos and diagrams in the Straw Bale Gardens Complete, for example. It's the one I have in front of me to really.
Yeah, I can't take credit for the illustrations in there. Some of them are really well done. And it's an illustrator named Pam Powell who did the illustrations. So she's just terrific. You know, the charts and stuff I put together, but the illustrations are just amazing. She's a great artist.
Yep, she is indeed. Martin in Reedsburg emailed to say jumping worms have migrated to Sauk County, and they're wondering if straw bale gardening would be a viable option instead of planting in soil. And, you know, the jumping worms love to naturalize or neutralize the soil.
Yeah, the jumping worms will eventually get up into the bales as well. But it's certainly, whenever you have a soil-borne issue, you know, something that lives over winter in the soil, whether that's disease or insect or worms or whatever, you're at least going to have a head start if you're not using that soil and you're gardening above it. Now, putting a barrier down to help prevent those jumping worms from getting up into that bale quickly, that might help. I'm thinking like a landscape fabric or something, so water will go through it, but the worms can't crawl up through that fabric. They probably will still come up on the top and crawl in, you know, up over the sides, but
eventually,
probably is going to take a little bit longer for them to get there. But yeah, that'd be a great solution. I know that's a big problem in many parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin at this point, is those jumping worms.
Yeah. Ken in Cadott, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Kim. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been trying to do some straw bale gardening for a couple of years, and I have some good luck with tomatoes and stuff like that. But anything that, like a squash or a cucumber, I get like 20, or pumpkins, I get like a 15, 20, 25-foot vine and one or two produce.
Okay, you got insect problems. Yeah, you probably got squash bugs. That's a very common problem, and unfortunately, we can't avoid those with straw bale gardening. But there are, if you look on the backs of the leaves, usually when the vines get about 6 to 8 leaves long, something like that, you'll see little white butterflies flitting around in your garden, and those little white butterflies, or moths, I guess, will lay eggs on the back of those leaves. And those eggs, they kind of look like little orange dots, and they're all lined up. So if you go out there and check the leaves once in a while, you'll see these. And if you see those, you got to brush them off. Get a little paintbrush, stiff bristled brush, and brush those off. I encourage, if you see those little white butterflies, to cover your vines up for a few days. You just need to cover them up for about 2 weeks, and those butterflies will leave. They'll go lay their eggs at the neighbor's garden instead of at your garden. But once those eggs are laid, once those larvae hatch, they crawl down the stem and they crawl burrow inside the stem of your vine, and they'll cut the sap flow off. So from right where they burrow in, all the distance beyond that on that vine will be dead. And, you know, you can catch them and you can, make a little slit in the vine and try and take the end of a pen or something and flick that larva out of the vine, and sometimes they'll recover. But you got to catch them pretty quick. That's it's a common garden issue in all of Minnesota and Wisconsin is squash bugs.
One other issue I just occurred to me as Ken was talking was that he was talking about vines that were like 25 feet long. I wonder if there would be too much nitrogen, or maybe he put too much nitrogen in the bale itself. Would that be an issue, Joel?
Yeah. If the vines aren't dying, if the problem is, I don't know if he's still on the line, Ken, but if
Ken,
the
are
vines dying?
Yeah, I am. And I'll get a blossom. A lot of times I'll get several blossoms, and then the blossom just doesn't turn into any fruit.
Okay. Yeah. It can be a pollination issue as well. You know, they're insect pollinated. So, squash are, so you can hand pollinate. That's a pretty easy process to do with a Q-tip, but I know not a lot of people got other things to do than go out and pollinate their squash when they get home from work. They're not all like me. So, but
well, a lot of people are like you right now because they're all at home.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. If our squash were flowering now, we could all go out and do it by hand, but yeah, that can be an issue with pollination. You know, I would encourage a few flowers. That always helps, you know, plant a few flowers in your vegetable garden. That helps bring in some of the pollinators, and that will help. You know, from a squash, to tell you the truth, squash is one of my best crops I grow in my straw bale garden. So they usually are very successful, with the exception of the squash bug, which can be a bugger for people. And there's really no way around it. It's a flying moth that comes in. So there's really not a whole lot you can do to prevent them from coming, you know, unless you want to soak your garden in chemical insecticides all the time. There isn't a whole lot you can do. You know, look for them, and when you do see them come around, try and cover your vines up. And when I say cover them up, I mean like with vegetable row cover cloth, or, you know, if you're familiar with tulle that they sell at the fabric store, it's like a real fine mesh kind of material that works just to keep those butterflies away from the vines for that 10-day or 2-week period, so they don't lay those eggs, and then you won't obviously have any problems with squash bugs.
And if you're going to do your own pollinating, you know, there may be, you know, maybe Ken says, well, heck, I could do some pollinating. I got some time. What do you do?
Yeah, you need a little Q-tip, and you're going to get the pollen on the end of the Q-tip, you know, go to the stamen, and then you got to go inside the flowers and just kind of mix it around like you're for 3 seconds inside of each flower, and that gets it on the female part of the flower, the pistil, I think it's called, in the center, and then that pollination happens very quickly. You know, doesn't take much at all, just kind of the end of a Q-tip, use a long Q-tip and stick down in the flower. And it's pretty easy to do. You know, there are male and female flowers, so it's important to identify which ones are which. And you can tell by the little, there's like a little bulb growth right underneath the flower on the female ones, where the males don't have that, it sort of doesn't expand as much right below the flower. So you can tell the difference if you look online too, you can see some pictures, and that'll really help you to identify which ones are male and female.
Mm-hmm. Joel Karsten, our guest today. Ken, thank you so much for calling. He is the author of a number of books. The one I have in front of me is called Straw Bale Gardens Complete. It's published by Cool Springs Press. Great to have him with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Talking straw bale gardening here on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, author Joel Karsten, graduate from the UW, the University of Minnesota, Bachelor of Science in Horticulture Science, and a number of best-selling books to his credit on straw bale gardening and the methods associated with them. Great to have you listening in today, and if you have a question, comment, or an experience, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Ann in Stevens Point has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. A couple quick questions. If you're using a standard old-fashioned bale, you know, rectangular thing that's, what, 3 or 4 feet long, and you're using lawn fertilizer, high nitrogen lawn fertilizer, how much nitrogen do you apply to the bale to condition it? And the second question is, once conditioned, how many standard-sized tomato plants can you plant in a single bale?
Good questions.
Good questions, Ann. Yes, and very common. If you're using lawn fertilizer, you're going to end up using a total of 2 1/4 cups on each bale, but you're going to split that up. And how I want you to put it on is 1/2 cup on days 1, 3, and 5, and then 1/4 cup on each bale on days 7, 8, and 9, 3 days in a row. And you're going to see the bacteria get very active on days 7, 8, 9. You'll put your hand in that bale and you'll feel 135 degrees temperature coming out of that bale. And that's bacteria in there colonizing the bale, reproducing. They vibrate when they split in half, and that vibration causes friction, which dissipates as heat out of that bale, believe it or not. Not a lot of heat comes out of each bacteria, Larry, because they're so small. But what you got to remember is how many bacteria there are inside that bale. That nitrogen is their food. So as soon as you add a little nitrogen and water, they consume that nitrogen, and that causes them to replicate. That's their only job in life, is to reproduce. And if you're planting tomatoes, Ian, I highly encourage you to plant only one tomato in a bale, because it's going to get huge, especially if you're doing hybrid type tomatoes, you know, the indeterminates, the early girl, something like that. I mean, they're going to get 8 feet tall to the top of that trellis that you put above the bales. And then they're going to get 8 feet in both directions, and you're going to get a whole bunch of tomatoes up there. So it's not a matter of how much space there is when you plant them. They're easy. You could easily get 2 or 3 planted in a bale, but the problem is the vines are going to grow, and they're going to just cover each other up. So your production out of one bale in 3 plants is going to be the same as if you just put 1 plant in that bale. If you're doing heirlooms, which are smaller tomatoes, you know, smaller, they only give you maybe 15, 18 tomatoes per plant. Those you can probably get 2, 1 in each end. And even if you're only planting 1 or 2 tomatoes in a bale, remember, you can still plant other things in that bale. So in the sides, you can put some basil, and, you know, you can put some carrots, and you could, you know, plant other things in that same bale of straw. It doesn't have to be just a tomato, because it's going to take a long time for that tomato to get big and for the vines to cover that trellis. And by that time, you can have other crops that are already done, you know, that were planted around that bale. So don't be afraid to mix things together on the same bale of straw. But really one tomato. And I know people are going to say, well, I did 2 tomatoes and it worked. But usually you end up, if you measure the overall production, you end up with the same number of tomatoes, because there's only so much sunlight, you know, and there's only so much moisture in that bale and fertility. So I would just encourage you to do 1 tomato.
Yeah, it's always hard to put one in there. They look so lonely.
Yeah,
but once later, they're big, then like you say, why did? Yeah, well, then once they're big, you wonder, why the heck did I put two in or whatever? Yep. Oh, man. And that's does another, that help?
Oh, it certainly does. Thank you. I've been gardening for 50 years. It's time to try this.
All right, yep. There you go.
You'll love it, Ann. You'll love it. You'll love it.
And, you know, just to add here, in your book, you know, you talk about how to make tomato. You can make your own tomato cages. And pretty simple process that you describe.
Yeah, I tell people, you know, some people like cages. They don't want to do the trellis. I show them how to do a simple trellis above the bales. But if they don't want a trellis, they can build a cage. And the best tomato cages are made from concrete reinforcing wire. You talk to the big gardeners, commercial guys out there, that's what they all use. And you can buy this stuff. If you're making a whole bunch of them, you can buy great big spools of this and, you know, make dozens of them out of one spool. But you can get sheets that are, I think they're like 8 feet long, 7 feet long or something, and 4 feet or 5 feet tall. And you spool them up, and I just use zip ties to tie them together. Sometimes you can split the wires in half to make two towers out of one concrete reinforcing wire. But they're the perfect size because they're nice and big squares, so you can easily reach your hand in. And even if you're getting a great big, you know, Cherokee purple tomato out of there, you can get it back out of the fence. The problem is if you use fence that has too small holes, you can't get the tomato out of the cage when you reach inside there. So, because the tomatoes get too big. But the other consideration with straw bales is you're going to need to put another post next to that cage to hold that cage in position on top of the bales, because it's not going to balance like it might on the soil. You know, if you had sharp points, you could stick it in the soil, maybe put a little wooden stake next to it. If it's in a bale, you need a big fence post next to that bale to hold that tomato cage upright, or it'll just tip over in the wind. So
there you go. Let's go to Arnie and... Let's go to Arnie in Plainfield next. Hi, Arnie.
Hey, Arnie. Hi, Larry. I'm wondering what your guest has for information, because he was talking about a new organite, and I understand that's not an organic rated product by OMRI. It's, you know, a sewage product out of the Milwaukee area, and I prefer to do things a little more natural. And I use a product called Chicken Poo, and that's rated as organic. And it's probably a lot lower than you're using for your, you know, your three numbers. But I have fair luck with it, and I use it in my orchard all the time. I don't particularly want to eat any sewage chemicals. So.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, there used to be a real problem with heavy metals in the milorganite. This is years ago. And apparently they've got a lot of those problems solved, worked out. And they know they test, boy, I've been there before, and I think they test like 30 times a day. They pull samples off of the line, and they run it through their test process to make sure that they're in compliance, that there's not too much heavy metals and too much of anything else. And so I think they do a pretty decent job. Now, if you're using this stuff year after year because you're using it on soil and you're going to garden in that same exact soil every year from now until who knows when, you may get problems that will build up in that soil if you use something that has too much heavy metals in it. But with the straw bales, we're only using them for a season or two seasons, and then we're not going to use them anymore. You know, then they go into our compost and go around our shrubs or perennial gardens or annual beds or whatever, once they become compost. So yes, there is a little controversy. You know, people need to make their own decision on stuff like that, whether they want to use it or not. But it definitely is an option. And I'll tell you, we did a study a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago at a Montessori grade school. We did this big garden and we did a study and we tried all different types of organic fertilizers. And the number one performer we had that year, the number one result was milorganite. Of all of them. So it says a lot about the product, that it does work well, and it breaks down, you know, breaks down pretty well, but it also doesn't leach as much because the nitrogen's a little slower release, I think, than some of the other organics.
And to go along with this, Chuck from Wisconsin Dells had called in earlier, couldn't hang on, but he said He uses kelp meal, and he says that makes things grow wonderfully. I don't know if you've had any experience with kelp meal.
Yeah, sure. Any of those. Yeah, absolutely. You know, if as long as it's got, I tell people to try to shoot for something that's got at least 5% nitrogen concentration. If it's an organic, you want to look for something with at least 5%. So I don't know exactly what kelp meal has in it. But I do get people, it seems like it's like especially Europeans. I get a lot of Europeans who want to do it without any animal products at all. So they won't use blood meal as their organic source. And of course they wouldn't use any type of product like Milorganite because that comes from animals as well, human beings, but animals. So they look for an alternative that would meet their vegan requirements, and kelp meal would work for them. They also, there's some soy-based products out there that have a lot of nitrogen in them that will work to break down the straw bales. Corn gluten is another one that has a lot of nitrogen in it. And, you know, if you can get enough percentage of nitrogen, which that 5% seems to be about the minimum, you can get it enough work down into the bale to make it work.
Joel Karsten is our guest today, graduate from the University of Minnesota with a Bachelor of Science degree in horticulture science. He has written a number of books on straw bale gardening. The one I have in front of me is called Straw Bale Gardens Complete: Breakthrough Vegetable Gardening Method. Oh, it's great to have him with us and great to have you listening. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Joel Karsten. He's the founder of Straw Bale Gardening. He's traveled around the world to help grow vegetables in areas that didn't have that option. And he's written a number of best-selling books on the topic. So, questions for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Give us a call, shoot us an email. Joel, we have callers online, and Helen from Big Bend, Wisconsin has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, Helen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've just about given up thinking I was even going to garden this summer because the woodchucks know how to climb fences and dig holes underneath fences to get in, as well as the rabbits and whatever. Anyway, we have a flat roof. Could we plant straw bales up on a flat roof that's got black rubber on it? Would that be too hot?
No, people do all the time on top of their roofs, especially in Europe. We have a lot of people who do it in France and Germany, in Denmark. They garden on top of their flat roofs all over there. So, yeah, absolutely.
And the fertilizer wouldn't harm the rubber on the roof?
No, I would put something down on top of the rubber roof, like, you know, maybe put some black plastic down or something just to separate, make a barrier, and then put your bales on top of that. I usually don't recommend if you're on the ground putting plastic underneath your bales because then it holds the water. But on top of a roof, it certainly isn't going to hurt anything because your water's all going to run off the roof eventually. It's got to be sloped, so it all goes away anyway. So it should be fine. Black plastic and or clear plastic, and then put your bales on top of that, and it shouldn't have any trouble.
Yeah.
And how far apart should you have your bales? Or doesn't it matter?
Keep the rows of bales at least 4 feet spaced between them. Further apart is even better than 4 feet, but 4 feet's the minimum, mainly because of crop shading. You know, your one row of bales, you don't want to shade the next row of bales. So that's a consideration. Also, remember when you're growing crops up there, if you do stuff that needs a tall trellis, you're gonna have to figure out how to put a trellis above those bales somehow. We have a picture in the book of how we build them in a parking lot. So if you can't pound a post in the ground to make a trellis, there is a way you can do it using a 2x4 frame, which is real simple to build. So that might work on your rooftop as well, to build that 2x4. If you email me directly, I'll send you a couple pictures so you'll have something you can go off of, Helen.
also, is Miracle-Gro all right for fertilizer or not?
Miracle-Gro? Yeah, people use that. It's expensive, though. Yeah, it's an expensive option, but you certainly can use it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Ben in Milwaukee next. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot. This is great. I've never heard of this before. I'm definitely going to get this book and explore this. We are in the city and have a small urban lot. And I've been trying and trying. The soil is not good. And because of that and for ease of use, we want to build raised beds, which is kind of an undertaking, hauling soil and such like that. Now, my question is, if I build the frames for raised beds and then start with these straw bales, is this eventually going to break down and be a viable option to fill these, raised wooden beds for gardening?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They'll as they decompose, they become compost soil. So just after a couple of years, you'll want to put a new one on top, and it'll probably take a couple of years because they shrink by about 75%. You start out with this great big bale. By the time you're done and it's all become compost, it's about 25% left. So it'll take a few years to get those raised beds completely filled, but yeah, they'll drain nice. You'll have good compost in there. It's very funny that you talk about raised beds. I did a post a couple of days ago in a group on Facebook called Raised Bed Gardening, where everybody talks about their raised beds that they build. And I put a post on there and just showed a picture of my garden, just with the bales themselves, without anything around them. There's no wood or anything to hold them up, just the bale itself. And put a post on there. This raised bed garden costs $90 plus $12 in fertilizer. And these other people are spending, hundreds and, even thousands of dollars building these beautiful raised beds. And the post I put on there got so many comments from people that said, I was thinking about building these raised beds and spending all this money and filling them up with this expensive, compost fill or whatever. And now this is a terrific option for me. At least see if you like it in that spot. See if you get the right sunlight. See if you get, if you like gardening, if this is something you're really into, before you spend all that money to build those permanent raised beds that can never be moved once you build them.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Experiment. Ben, does that help?
Absolutely. And I have the material. I'm an arborist, so I have small logs that I bring home for this to build these. I guess my concern would be if this stuff is constantly breaking down, is it going to create an environment? Do I have to wait a couple of years before it's soil that I can plant my vegetables in? Is it going to be
start out, Ben. The first year you're going to plant right in the bale, and the second year you're going to plant in the bale. First year, second year in the bale, and by the beginning of the third year, that bale's really become soil. So now I encourage you to put another bale on top of that until that raised bed has a good depth of soil. Until you got 15, 20 inches of soil, it's hard to grow vegetables unless you got at least 15 inches of soil in a raised bed, because those roots need a reservoir to get down into. So once a few bales break down, now your raised bed's filled up. I even get people that have full raised beds that will do straw bale gardening on top of their raised beds. because even if it's a raised bed, they still can get weeds and they can get, insect and disease problems in the soil that's in that raised bed. So if you're starting with bales, you're starting with fresh soil, which is the big advantage. But it'll work, Ben. Trust me. People do it in raised beds all the time. You'll have great luck.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much, Ben, for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Chris from Adams called just to say earlier, a comment about the person who was using old drawers to create a gardening space in the drawers themselves. He just cautioned to think about lead-based paints or old varnishes that used to contain lead. the lead can leach into what you might want to grow. So that's something, I guess, to consider as well.
Yep. Yeah, we got to be concerned about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Talk a little bit about, you've mentioned a couple of times your experiences and your one book in which you talk about what people are doing around the world with straw bale gardening. Talk about some of your favorite experiences in the countries you visited.
Well, probably the most impact we've had has been in the country of Cambodia, where in the rural parts of Cambodia, there's sort of this cycle that they go through. They're a very agricultural-based economy. There's still 75% of people that live on farms over there and get their living from their agriculture. And one of the problems they have is they get monsoon rains for 3 months, so they can't grow any crops during the monsoons. And then they get severe drought for 2 months. So for this five-month period, they can't grow anything. Well, doesn't sound like a big deal to you and I, because we just run down to the Hy-Vee, yeah, when we get some produce. Over there, it doesn't work that way. They're 2.5-3 hours from the city. Most of these people have never been more than 10 kilometers from their house where they live, where they were born. You know, they just don't have, they don't have vehicles. They don't have any way to get around. And during the flood season, there's water everywhere. So, there's 6 feet of water everywhere. So how in the world do you solve this problem, right? So we came in and we brought them a solution, and this solution, Larry, was to dig a big hole in their farm, okay? We dug a big pit, 15 feet deep, 30 feet by 30 feet. We pile all the soil from this hole, made a plateau right next to the hole that we dug. And on top of this plateau, and the plateau happens to be above their flood level, their highest flood level, we took rice straw from their rice fields and made bales, homemade bales, put the bales on top of this plateau. Now, even though the monsoon rains come, it rains all day long, they're still sunny while it's raining. And these plants, as soon as the rain stops, gravity carries the excess moisture out the bottom of these straw bales, and air can come back into the bale. And that allows these vegetable roots to thrive even during the monsoon season, which if you planted them in any soil, they're dead, because they get root rot right away. And now when the drought comes, we got this big, huge pit right next to the garden, so they can take water out of this pit to keep watering the garden up on top of this mound that we've created. So it's not a big garden, but it's enough to grow vegetables during this five-month period where they have never been able to grow any type of vegetables. So they have rice to live on during this 5 months, but if you only eat carbohydrates, you only eat rice, it really causes severe malnutrition. So some of the most malnourished people on earth are the children of farmers in rural parts of Cambodia. And so this was a huge problem, and the solution was to dig a hole, believe it or not. How simple is that, right? And then teach them how to do this straw bale gardening up on top of this mound that we made. So we started with zero farmers. Now we're just approaching 7,500 farmers that are doing this. So it spreads really quickly. I always tell people, if you've got a simple solution to fill an empty stomach for no money, no out-of-pocket cost, it gets adapted very quickly, and it spreads like wildfire. So there's a lot of people over there that have adopted this technology and are now using it. I guess if you'd call it a technology, but just sort of a simple solution to a problem that stared them right in the face for thousands of years. They farm the same land, and their kids will farm the same land 100 years from now. And they've all faced this same problem, 5 months of malnutrition every year. And they've solved that problem by using this method. So that was a unique one.
Yeah, that's got to give you a lot of satisfaction.
Yeah, it's a great feeling to feel like you've helped to solve a problem like that. And that's just one example. We do a lot of urban gardening in the Philippines. It's a big problem in the Philippines is food security as well. A lot of very poor people in big cities. And of course, they own no land and they own no tools and they have very little knowledge of agriculture and they have very little access to water. How do you solve that problem, right? Well, with straw bale gardening, you don't need land. You can put these bales right next to your front stoop and you don't need tools. Once those bales are in position, you don't need any tools to do this. A knife might be handy, to cut the vegetables off or to, make a hole in the bale, that kind of thing. And you don't need to buy fertilizer, Larry. We all make a little fertilizer every morning. Mm-hmm. Urine will work as fertilizer. If you absolutely are desperate, which these people are, you can use human urine, which is sterile and it has 12% nitrogen on average. depending on what you eat, right? Your protein levels will change, but that will work to condition these bales and prep them. And in the West, you know, we curl our nose and we, oh, that's gross. But it's a common thing in Asia. They use urine a lot as fertilizer because it is a sterile liquid fertilizer, essentially. And they save seeds from their vegetables. So we teach them, you know, you give them three 15-minute videos they can watch in their native language. And within that 45 minutes, they become experts on how to do a straw bale garden. And once they start it, within 60 days, they're already harvesting lettuce and peas and beans and things like that. And then their neighbor next door says, well, if he can do it, I can do it, right? This can't be that hard. And so the knowledge spreads from one person to the next. And you see these urban gardens spring up outside these apartment buildings. They're gardening in the parking lot, essentially, of these apartment buildings and growing their own food for the first time in their life. They're able to grow their own food.
Oh, that's amazing stories. Cal in Sugar Camp has a question for you. Let's go there. Cal, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Hi. I was just curious as to what happens after day 9 with the malorganite and with the lawn fertilizer technique. Do you just water 1 gallon a day after that until you get to the end, and that's when you do the ashes and bone meal or the 10-10-10? I'm confused after day 9.
Okay. Yeah, I can help you out. On day number 10 is when you'd want to add your wood ashes or your bone meal if you're doing it organically. If you're doing it using traditional methods, just a cup on a bale of 10-10-10. And 10-10-10 is a very common fertilizer. Every hardware store carries it. It's called garden fertilizer on each bale. And then you can plant by day 12 if you're using the refined fertilizer mechanism. If you're using the organic, it usually takes another 5 days. There's a process that bacteria has to go through where first it has to break down the fertilizer to make the nitrogen available so that it can then use the nitrogen to create the colonization inside the bale. So it just delays the process a little bit longer. It kind of depends on the air temperature when you're doing your conditioning process. I encourage people, if it's a day like today and you're standing out there in your parka trying to get your bales to grow bacteria, you're not going to be very successful, you know, because it's colder outside than it is inside your refrigerator in the house. And the reason we have refrigerators is to keep bacteria from growing on our food. So if you're trying to grow bacteria in bales and it's colder than it is in your refrigerator, you're not going to be very successful. So wait till a nice warm day. If you start that 20 days before your average last frost, you're going to hit a window in that conditioning period where it's going to be 65 or 70 degrees on one of those days or a couple of those days. And that bacteria will very quickly colonize at 70 degrees. Literally within 12 hours, that whole bale can be colonized with bacteria because it will grow so rapidly in those warmer temperatures. So it doesn't take long. Once this happens, you can stick your hand down in there and you can feel the temperature go up. Now, if you get really desperate, your bales are cool. I get a ton of these emails every spring. Oh my goodness, I've been conditioning my bales and they're not getting warm. What do I do? Well, it's not the end of the world. It's still going to work even if they don't get hot inside. If there's any temperature increase at all, the bacteria are growing. But you can cover the bales up, put a leaf bag, you know, a black leaf bag, plastic bag over the top of the bale. Just tuck it in the strings on the side. Don't cut the bag because you can still use it for your leaves in the fall. Just drape it over the top and that black will absorb the sunlight. So on a day when it's sunny out, that bale is going to heat up inside because that black plastic will absorb that sun's energy. And once you start that process of just getting that bale a little bit warm, then the bacteria will start growing and then they self-generate their own heat. So once you get that reaction started inside, then the bacteria will take over. You can fold your bags up, put them back in the garage, and your bales will be nice and warm for the next few days after that.
There you go. Thank you so much for that question, Cal. Michael in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good afternoon, Larry and Joel. Long-time gardener, long-time listener, and I've been hearing you rave about these straw bale gardenings for so long that I finally did my own last summer. And I have to say it was fantastic, but I did a little variation of what you've been speaking about. What I did was I put the bales double wide, and then I put the compost in all the seams, and I planted a tomato in each of those seams at the juncture of every 3-foot bale. And I also grew a conventional row, and I can tell you that the tomatoes in the straw bale gardening section just outdid it It was fantastic, and there was less disease, a lot less of the septorial leaf spot and early blight. And then I got poles, 10-foot poles, and I put a stock fence. It's like a hog fence. You can get it at a Fleet Farm Tractor Supply, and use that for trellis. But it was fantastic. It was, like I said, a lot less of the septorial leaf spot and early blight, and the tomatoes took off like crazy.
And you're doing it again this year.
Well, I got to find a source. I scavenged around for bales last year. I think I'm going to have to buy some this year. But as a matter of fact, this morning before the show, I was turning over that whole row with a pitchfork, deciding what I'm going to plant in last year's row. But I'm definitely doing it again year after year.
Good. That's good to hear. I was going to warn Michael to avoid injury, because you get tomatoes that get that tall, then you got to get a stepladder out there in your garden to pick your tomatoes. You can get hurt climbing up that stepladder.
Well, Michael, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for calling. Mike in Stevens Point has a question. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hey,
Mike. What's on your mind?
I got a question about raised bed gardening, more so in the straw bale part, but they're kind of interrelated. My question is it safe to use treated store-bought lumber for the frame of the raised bed? My concern being that might leach out the copper, arsenic, or whatever chemicals they got in there into my vegetables, especially, you know, succulent ones. Or would it be better to use something more natural that's durable in contact with the ground, like white oak or American elm, or any other number of woods that are out there?
Okay. Well, Joel, I would use natural if it was me, if I had my choice.
Yeah, for sure. There's no use taking a risk. You never know what's going to happen until years down the road, and then you wonder why you'd made that decision. So, you know, as long as you have access to other materials, I certainly would choose the ones that were the untreated. Of course, you're going to have to replace them in, you know, 7, 8, 10 years. But you know, there's some liner you could use too. You could try and line the inside of it with plastic to try to avoid some of that rotting action. But I think anything that holds moisture next to the wood like that, you're going to get some rotting, but that's not the end of the world. Replace them in 7, 8, 10 years and start over again. No big deal.
Joel, once again, here we are running out of time. Tell us again your website and how to get in contact with you.
I'll tell you the best website to go to is strawbalegardenclub.com. And it sounds official, like you got to join a club. You can come there for free. There's all kinds of videos there to watch. And there's a forum you can post on if you got a question about something, stuff you can sign up for and get for free. We got our little 6-week greenhouse that I had at the Garden Expo. You might remember that, Larry.
Yeah.
One made out of two cattle panels and a little greenhouse you can start. We give you the plans for how to build that. Yeah. So come and visit strawbalegardenclub.com. You can get all my books. And if you want to buy Bale Buster, which is our proprietary bale prep stuff, we got that for sale there too. So.
Oh, wonderful. It's always a pleasure, Joel. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Joel Karsten. He is the author of a number of books on straw bale gardening. I think we've got a link to his site on our website at WPR.org/Larry. So you can go there as well if you didn't get that all down. Next week on Garden Talk, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, visits with us. And on Monday, we're going to talk about libraries and their services. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.